Good morning, everyone. Thanks for coming out and joining us today. I know there are a lot of great sessions on the program, so really appreciate your coming to listen to us today. So my name is Gavin Huffam. I'm with Battelle Memorial Institute. We're a big, large contract research firm like WestEd or RTI or RAND or one of the other places that you might see over in the convention booth area. Battelle also has a booth. You're welcome to come by and hear some more about our organization. So I'm here reporting on some of the work that some of my colleagues and I from Battelle have been working on lately. Dr. Lisa Covens, Dr. Kyoshin Kim couldn't be here today, so happy to report out on some of this work. I am a health services researcher and mostly doing aging-related work. And I had been doing a lot of work with Japanese colleagues looking at the aging of the population in Japan and how that phenomenon might have relevant lessons for the aging society here in this country. And as a result of that work, I started to think about what we might learn from looking at some of the Asian population that's already here. So some of my work was comparative earlier, and this line of work that we're initiating is largely exploratory work to take a look at the population that is here now. Let me see if I can... Okay, and no disclosures to report. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to spend about the first half of the talk basically describing this population. Most of you, this will not be new information for many of you in the room. And then in the second half of the talk, I'm going to talk about some empirical work that we are starting to do that's informed by some large population-based survey data. So as you all well know, there's a growing population of aging and older aging Americans and Pacific Islanders in this country. It's characterized by it's a multi-ethnic and multicultural population. And as the previous talk so amply demonstrated, this is not a homogeneous population by any means. And it's in my talk will not do justice to the fine-grained differences between these groups. But it is very hard to get nationally representative data on these populations at that level of granularity. So we will, we do the best we can with the data that we have at hand. This population is characterized by a very large number of immigrants, and they are also quite a few of them are recent arrivals coming into status with either refugee or asylum status. Many other issues that they come into this country with, English language proficiency is somewhat variable as well. But as healthcare professionals, if we want to provide good clinical service to this population, I think we need to know a lot more about them. But that is challenged by some of the gaps that we have in our knowledge about these populations. So we'd like to know, whether certain social or cultural experiences that they come into this country with might be associated with better health or better quality of life or worse health and quality of life. We would like to know, are their health care needs being met? And we'd like to know, of course, if our clinical workforce is ready to care for them. So in terms of the phenomena, if you look at the percent of older adults across 3 years, census data from 2012 and then projecting out into 2030 and 2050, we can see, and again, maybe this pointer might work. There we go. So these three columns, I'm going to show you that right now, as of a few years ago, the Asian component of the aged population was about 10%, and the NHPI portion about 6%. And projecting forward, that is projected to grow to about 15% for the Asian alone population and 12%. And then going out to 2050, the older population, those over 65, will be characterized by, 20% Asian alone population. So this is not only a growing population, but it's a growing proportion of the aged population. In terms of the, who are these persons and what is their heritage, the Chinese Americans are constitute the largest subgroup, 3.8 million as of a recent census population data. Filipino in descending order, Southeast Indian, Vietnamese, Korean, and Japanese, and some of these other groups in descending order and smaller and smaller. And the same with the Native American, Hawaiian or other Pacific Islander groups. And interestingly enough, among all these Asian ethnic groups, the Hawaiian and Pacific Islander groups are most likely to report multiple races in recent census data. So it's a very interesting phenomenon there. In terms of the percentage of these populations who are foreign, of our current population who are foreign born, we can see that Asian Americans are predominantly an immigrant population in this country, much more so than Hispanic or African American or other non-Hispanic white populations. So over 60% of this population are foreign born. Refugees and asylees who came, are persons who came to the United States to escape persecution. And there's legal differences in each of those statuses, of course. We're going to lump some of those together later in the analysis. Some have come as legal immigrants, some have come as refugees, some come as asylees. In terms of their English language proficiency, this is interesting. It's been going down in over the last two decades or so, which has a significant impact in terms of interacting, acculturating, and more importantly for our purposes, accessing healthcare, the healthcare community. Some of the issues that are unique to healthy aging among the older Asian and Pacific Islander Americans, some of these issues, they're a very complicated set of issues that a clinical provider would want to be cognizant of, and as analysts, we would certainly want to know about their timing of their entry into the U.S. So, and the age at which they enter. The period, where are they Cambodian refugees, escaping the killing fields, or are they Hmong being relocated for other reasons, and their legal status, of course. We'd want to keep in mind, some of the things that we already know about immigrant populations, the so-called healthy immigrant paradox, for example, language barriers. Geographic mobility, their neighborhood effects. And so as the previous speakers mentioned, there tends to be some clustering of these of immigrants into somewhat homogenous communities that help with social support. And as we saw, there are very high levels of social support within some of these communities. Many other financial and social resources differences. There are very interesting occupational differences and that prevent previously licensed professionals in from their country of origin from gaining that similar type of work in this country as well. Physicians, for example, have a very difficult time of becoming a practicing physician again in this country. So some of the key research questions that we wanted to look at our, what's associated with physical and mental health, and are there differences as they age? So some of the data that we have access to are national, very high quality representative sample data of the U.S. Civilian non-institutionalized population that we were able to access through something called the National Epidemiological Survey on Alcohol and Related Conditions. And you would not think that this would be a very rich source of data just based on the title alone, but it turns out that there is some interesting findings that I think we can pull from this kind of data set, it being a nationally representative sample. We used the Wave 2 data from this study. About 3% of this national sample are Asian or Pacific Islanders, and if we restrict that sample somewhat further to those in each of the two age groups below here, the adult 45 to 64, and then the older adult population, we end up with an analytical sample of about 400 persons. Our dependent measures of quality of life are measured by a very well-known and validated SF-12 version 2 scale developed over many decades by Ware and colleagues. And two domains, there's physical health domain, a mental health domain, and there are items in each of those domains along these lines, physical fitness, their general health, bodily pain, physical role function, for the one, and then mental health measures, emotional role functioning, social functioning, and some other questions that are combined in composite ways. It's a norm-based scoring set of measures, so it allows us to compare our findings across populations. In terms of the findings on our dependent measures across each of these subpopulations that we're talking about, there were great differences between the younger and the older subgroups in the physical health domains, with about 51 points on average for the adults and about 44 for the older adults, and these scales are normed to have a mean of 50 and standard deviations on a 100-point scale. So this gives you a little idea, sort of, you know, the younger adults are about average in terms of their physical health. The older adults are about 20% worse health. And the mental health domains, they are about the same. They're both sort of about average in terms of their mental health capacity. So what we want to do is explain the variation in each of those subscales. And to do that, we've from this very large data set, we chose some factors from the literature that we thought would be associated and predictive to help explain the variation in these domains. A range of socio-demographic factors and their immigrant status. We were able to get this immigrant status out of this data set, which is one of the reasons why we chose this data set for this work. A range of social support measures, a range of stressors in their life, for example, the number of traumatic events in the past year. And again, we used a similar discrimination scale to that used by the first speaker this morning, perceived level of stress measure, and then some cultural practices and identity measures as well. So, for example, the frequency of their socializing with members of their own ethnic group, their frequency of using English in their daily life, and the strength of their identification with their ethnicity. So I'm going to show you some descriptive statistics and then show you some results of the multivariate analyses, a simple ordinary least squares regression. We use weighted data. So as I said, this is national representative data, so we can make some population estimates based on the way that this data was gathered. And then we are going to interact some terms to see about differences between the age groups. So in the simple descriptive statistics, you can see some differences between the younger and the older groups. The younger groups are a little less female, the older groups more female. The percent immigrants are high in both groups, so 81% of the 300 are immigrants, and just roughly 70% of the oldest group are immigrants. Of the immigrants, they've been here for quite a few years. And refugee status, a larger in the younger group. They're married mostly. They are college graduates to this extent. The younger group working. Health insurance they're mostly a well-insured population, so access to healthcare should not be a problem, but I'm going to show you that it might be a problem, actually. And their income is like this. So in terms of some of the findings, I'll show you the physical mental health subscale results at first, and then we'll move to the mental health subscale results. So these are standard regression parameters, and these are the standardized parameters, these betas. I will just show you that the starred items are significant in regression to at various significance levels. We forced in the age group variable because we wanted to retain that. Some of those other demographic explanatory variables that I showed you earlier dropped out in the results. So the ones that I'm showing you here are all of these significant results. Let me go backwards. Okay, so in bold, I just wanted to highlight, for example, the preference for using English is highly associated with higher levels of physical health. That's how that is interpreted. Show you, explain. Being married is highly associated with a better physical health. Being an immigrant is highly associated with better physical health. And the interaction down here is showing that there is a difference between the age groups in terms of a preference for using English. So the association is strong for both groups, but it is even stronger for the older cohort. So the findings for the mental health measures, you can see that some of them are very positively associated with higher levels of mental health, being an immigrant, having higher levels of perceived social support, a preference for using English, associated with good mental health. Being a refugee is bad for your mental health, and having higher levels of perceived stress, again, bad for your mental health. And in terms of the ones to highlight, that stress one, and again, another interaction term showing a difference by age group. So this is a summary of the findings. Showing some of the correlates of good and good mental and physical health, and again showing here an interaction effect with stress and mental health, and with a preference for using English and physical health. Some of the limitations, of course, and this is a cross-sectional study, and the limitations that come with that. It's a non-institutionalized sample, so we don't catch people who are in assisted living or nursing homes, this kind of thing. And of course, we already talked about the dangers of homogenizing a very non-homogeneous population here. But some of the findings, in terms of the implications, would be that perceived discrimination in healthcare being associated with worse physical health among older respondents, is to me, I interpret this as a possible access issue. So perceived discrimination, even among a highly insured population, is perhaps being seen as a barrier to accessing health care. So that is something that healthcare professionals could actually potentially work on. The second item, perceived stress associated with a poor physical and mental health, having a larger impact on the mental health for the oldest Asian and Pacific Islander respondents. A preference for using English associated with better physical and mental health for all respondents, but again, a larger impact on physical health for oldest Asian and Pacific Islander responders. This might speak to levels of acculturation. It might also speak to more practical matters of accessing those kinds of providers. In terms of some policy or some programs, some implications, I think we'd want to address this issue of perceived discrimination, potential confusion, possibly even among highly insured populations. Why is this happening? We don't know yet. Some things that we could do, and some of the things that the second presenter is already doing, raising awareness of some of these issues in these populations. Intervening early, possibly, to address perceived levels of stress. There are things that that we can do. Promoting social interaction and support among this population. They already are characterized in some pockets by very high levels of social support. So I think that's going to be a very, it would need to be a very tailored type of intervention. And then just to note the differential impact on the oldest portion of these populations, we would want to keep this in mind. So I take any questions. Thank you. Maybe in the back?
Hi, thank you for your presentation. It's interesting to look at these large data sets and some
Those are very good questions. To the first question, we did have a very hard time disaggregating. In fact, we did take a look, and the Pacific Islanders comprised of only about 10% of that 400. And so, you know, you run into a cell size problem very quickly with that kind of issue. So in that, it will be remain a limitation of this work. And to the second question, I am pretty sure that these interviews were conducted in English, and that is another potential limitation that you rightly observe, given the probably higher levels of acculturation suggested by participating in the survey. Yeah. Another question.
Were there any significant differences between your API participants, those who had immigrated at a younger age compared to those who immigrated at an older age?
As I said, we weren't able to disaggregate, you know, completely, but there were differences by age group, but by their length of time in country, there were no differences. So those variables actually dropped out, and we were a little bit surprised by that. And then we don't know why. It could be because it's a small sample, but we don't know why. But that's a very good line for future work.
I want to echo my colleague's recommendation of disaggregation because we're looking at
a population. Absolutely.
Yeah, so increasing the quality here. Two things. One is that, you know, notwithstanding the emphasis on disaggregation, understanding not just perceived stress as a construct, but what the domains of those stressors are. Mm-hmm. Because that's sort of within a cultural context. Mm-hmm. I could think of things like caregiver burden,
Right.
And individual stressors caused by their own illness or health and the impact on others. So these are really sociological questions that, again, I'm sure are not captured by the
Institute. Right. Right.
And the other question I had was the construct of acculturation, again, is already hard to define. Even harder to find in an Asian Pacific Islander context. I know people use language as a proxy, but to a certain extent, many of these Asian subgroups are high LEP, they have high levels of English proficiency, yet still prefer to speak in their native language.
Mm-hmm.
So using a singular item, preference of language, sort of masks their English proficiency, but yet within a cultural context still prefer to use their native language at that
point. Right.
So again, with the small cell size, I know that we're asking a lot here.
Right.
But I wonder if it would be worthwhile doing a secondary analysis where you stratify by proficiency of English and then look at language preference.
I think that's a great idea. If we could get around the cell size problem, that would really, I think bubble out some nice little findings. Because as you say, proficiency, in English is different from these other constructs that you talk about. And of course, and the use of English is going to be very context specific. If you're having a party at home, you're going to maybe talking in your native language. If you're out accessing the world, maybe it.
And actually, highly English proficient subgroups with language preference sensitivity actually predict better outcomes. So they have the mainstream available to navigate, yet have a strong social support. So I think it would be instructive, again, understanding the limitations of 400.
I think those are great questions, great comments, and I absolutely endorse all of them.
All right.
So, thank you.